Welcome to the Antisocial Podcast. This is episode 183 with Edward Banks, author, Africanist, and the man behind Heavy Metal Africa. But before we kick into the episode, let me introduce myself. My name is Andy Dowling, and I host this podcast, but I also play bass in the Australian metal band Lord. So if you want a little bit of a sticky beak into the world of heavy metal when it comes to all things Lord, you can go to lord.net.au, give our music a crack. We've got our whole back catalogue there, streaming links, video clips, everything's over there. You can go and check it all out. And you can check out the first single off our brand new album that's coming out soon called Fallen Idols. The song is called United, Welcome Back. And you can go to lord.net.au/united. And that has the track listing for the upcoming album. The Australian edition is there. The artwork is there. The video clip for United is there as well. And you can grab the t-shirt and all sorts of information is over there. lord.net.au/united. New album news coming very, very soon. So stay tuned for that. Now, in addition to all of that stuff, I also host the Self-Starter podcast, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. Season 2 is about to kick off next week by the time this episode comes out. June 3rd will be the start of Season 2. In the meantime, though, you can listen to Season 1 by clicking through on your podcast player and searching for Self-Starter, or you can go to selfstarter.com.au. Really looking forward to launching Season 2 and all of the Antisocial faithful getting behind that as you did for Season 1. So thank you very much for the support and hope it continues into Season 2. It's that time I do a shout out. Every week I thank some champion, some legend that supports me and the podcast, and it can be a range of different ways. Things such as leaving a review online somewhere. It doesn't even have to be online. It could be somewhere in the real world. It could be on a community notice board or something like that. If you do that, take a photo. It could be a bit of social media love. It could be a guest recommendation. It could be a message of encouragement. It could be buying some merchandise, a t-shirt or a patch or a USB pass from the first 100 episodes of the podcast. Plug, plug, plug. Over at the Bandcamp store. It could be anything. It doesn't matter. Small or big, it just keeps this podcast moving. So I really appreciate everything that everybody does to support me. But this week I thank Andrew Napstein. I'm sure I'm pronouncing your surname wrong, Andrew. Andrew is from Brisbane and plays in the Brisbane thrash metal band Wartooth, and you can go and check out wartooth.bandcamp.com if you love a bit of thrash metal. And the reason why Andrew's getting a shout out is a little while ago, he sent me a beer shout out via the PayPal button over at antisocial.net and with a little message attached to it. And I did write this out with my shocking handwriting, so let's see if I get this right. I've listened to too many of your podcasts not to shout you a beer. Love your work, mate. Keep at it, with little metal horns afterwards. So, Andrew, thank you so much. It was nice to meet you at Download as well in Sydney a few months back, and just really appreciate the support. It means a hell of a lot. So when you hear this, shoot me a message. I'm going to shoot you out a few little things in the post because we all love getting something in the mail. And thank you, as always, to everybody that supports me. Speaking of support, I also have a page set up that has all sorts of links to lots of different things that I sell. And that's a great way of explaining it. It is antisocial.net/buy stuff. And on that page, you will find links to the Lord online store over at Bandcamp, the Dominus Records online store, which is also on Bandcamp, my eBay and Discog stores as well. So the eBay store has a bunch of stuff that an eclectic array of items that Jess and I are selling, everything from clothes to music memorabilia to knickknacks to unwanted gifts. Sorry, folks, but stop giving me shit that I don't need, and all sorts of other stuff. So you can go and have a sticky beak over there. And my Discogs page has about 1,500 items from my music collection. So lots of stuff from metal to rock to punk to jazz to blues to pop and everything in between. I'm sure I just covered most of the stuff that I've actually got. Cassettes, vinyl, CDs, DVDs, etc. It's all over there at my Discog store. So if you go to antisocial.net/buy stuff, you'll be able to click on all the links and have a sticky beak. But if you can't access any of this for whatever reason, I've had a couple of people shoot me a message, just shoot me a DM and I'll give you the direct links and help you get there. But a few people to thank that have been supporting me via these different platforms. Here we go. I love this part of the podcast, trying to pronounce these people and places. Vashti from Southwest Rocks in New South Wales. Summer from Leichhardt in New South Wales. Aria from Beachmere in Queensland, Caitlin from Balaclava in Victoria. I can't get my head around that suburb name. Andrea from Toowoomba in Queensland, and Lyle from Leeton in New South Wales. Thank you so much, folks. Really appreciate it. And once again, antisocial.net/buy stuff. Go and check it all out. Episode 182 is with author, heavy metal fan, and Africanist Edward Banks. Edward is the author of Heavy Metal Africa. It's an amazing book that I've just finished reading recently, all about Edward's journey over several trips to Africa to learn about metal music in all these different countries within the continent of Africa. And it's a really, really cool, I guess it's a documentation of a whole bunch of different metal bands and how the scenes have evolved over the years and how different they are in each of their own respective countries. And it's just super cool. If anybody's ever seen Global Metal, which is the documentary that came out, I don't know, maybe a decade ago, Heavy Metal Africa was sort of inspired a little bit off the back of that from what I can recall. And I certainly get those vibes when I'm reading this book. It's just really, really insightful, and it's amazing how many incredible bands are within the continent of Africa. And, you know, many of us are still pretty oblivious to what's going on over there. So I'm hoping all of my metal friends that are listening will be inspired to go and not only pick up the book, but also check out a whole bunch of these bands. And we're going to list a bunch in the show notes over at andysocial.net. Ed has flicked through a bunch of links that I'm going to be referring to. So Bandcamp pages and videos and all sorts of stuff. So go over the show notes over at andysocial.net and go and have a sticky beak at that. And I'm going to have a bunch of links to ways of picking up the book. So you can pick up the paperback, but also the Kindle version as well, of Heavy Metal Africa. And if you want to reach out to Edward, you can also do so via his social media handle. So I believe on Twitter, it's Edward Banks, Edward B-A-N-C-H-S. He's also on Facebook as well. And the Heavy Metal Africa page is also on Twitter and Facebook, and I think Instagram as well. Go and check the show notes. It's all over there anyway, so you can go and check it all out. Anyway, enough crapping on from me. Please enjoy this really, really fun episode, Sean Connery, maybe a future guest, episode with Edward Banks.
I've never heard the word Africanist in my life until until I came across you. So can you, I guess, a double question, what is an Africanist, and how on earth did you find yourself to start claiming that title for yourself?
Oh, that's cool. That is someone who is just devoted to the study of Africa. It's more of an academic term, right? And it's just someone who, because there's in the United States, there's a lack of departments in a lot of universities that are devoted to the study of the continent. Hey, you can study African American history at a lot of universities, given the United States' unique history with bringing, you know, with the Middle Passages. So this is just to distinguish someone academically seems to have a focus on the continent of Africa, whether it's through anthropology field or through a political science field or history field. Right. So that's what that sort of term denotes. I am more of a political scientist in that regard. And then how? I have no idea. It's something I was quite fascinated with. I mean, I do detail a little bit in the beginning of the book. I was a kid. I was kind of fascinated with how other people around the world live, because I didn't have any of that exposure growing up. I grew up in a small town in the middle of the state I currently still live in, Pennsylvania, but I live in a bigger town now. But you're just surrounded by, there's only like 40,000, 50,000 people in the town I grew up in, which is quite, for America, that's not very large. But you really don't have a sense of the world around you. And as a kid, I started to get fascinated with the world around me, and I started to just do things. And I think I remember one of my earliest memories was talking about watching the Olympics and seeing all these different people from all over the world come out. And that's sort of the way it introduces you to how other people around the world look. And that interest sort of peaked when I was a kid. It started when I was a kid, and then it led to when I was an adult and I was looking for something. I needed something else, you know. I think I sort of slipped back away from that, and then we had awful terrorist attacks in America on September 11th, 2001. And you got to get pulled away, and you realize that you really just don't know much about the rest of the world. I didn't want to make any assumptions either. I didn't think it was fair to assume of a certain, have an assumption of a certain type of people or certain people because of what a handful of them just did. And that sort of got me kicking back into things. And it just really got, you know, I really was gravitated toward Africa when it came down to it. I just kept reading about it. I think it was that childhood interest again. And then I'm remembering too, like when I was, before all of that happened, I was always talking to my friend about South Africa, about how I found it fascinating that there were quote unquote white people in Africa. And it's just the thing, you just don't know.
Yeah.
And then you learn more about it and you learn more about the history of it and you're like, oh gosh. But you build from that and your curiosity is always there. So my early to mid 20s, I really just set about learning as much as I could about Africa. And then I went to college at, I say college, in Australia, you may say university.
Hmm.
Yeah. I was 26, 27 years old. I was kind of a late starter, but I'm glad I did it. And then it led to that. I got a degree in political science from Florida Atlantic University, and then I went to University of London, the School of Oriental and African Studies in London, and got a master's degree in African Studies. And that just, it really is from there. That's what I've devoted my life to, per se, as an adult, academically, is just Africa. African politics, I'm really getting into some aspects of African history, and that's it. Just goes from there.
It's sort of like the snowball effect.
Yeah, it really is. Sometimes it's hard to understand why we have certain interests that we do. But when you get into the academic world, you start to meet people that have rather niche interests. And the academic world is a great place for you to build from those niche interests, you know. You just go from there. You meet people that just are from small town Nebraska who can speak Arabic. Because you just get stuck into something that you just really want to learn more about. Or, you meet people, I've met people that speak fluent Russian and who know everything about Russia, who haven't even been to Russia yet.
Incredible.
Yeah. That's the academic world. It's quite a blessing in that regard. You don't limit your scope that way. That's for sure.
Going into that sort of academic world and as you said, you sort of just gradually sort of built this interest over time and from being a kid and then having these defining moments where you sort of made these decisions to learn more about the world around you. I've read the start of this book and you do touch on some of this, but when you look at the world of academia and metal as a genre of music, they don't seem to sort of instantly sort of run alongside of each other. Especially if you're looking at your typical stereotypes of what a metal musician is or a metal fan is. The stereotypes just don't match up whatsoever. Was there a moment where you sort of had, the silly light bulb moment where you sort of thought, there's something here where I could blend these two worlds together? Because, from what I understand, you've always loved metal music and you've been a fan of the genre for years. Yeah. But was there a moment in time where you sort of thought, oh, like maybe there's something I can work with here?
In terms of getting in metal in Africa, yeah, because my first trips there were eye-opening. Yes. The problem was I didn't know very much about it. And I didn't even know there was metal in Africa at all. Even the first trip I ever made to Africa, I was going to Zimbabwe, but I stopped down through Cape Town just to kind of see it. Cause I've always wanted to see Cape Town. And now I know the city quite well, but, I wanted to get a better understanding of the city. And I ended up meeting metal fans. Right. And that was it. And that's sort of what got what piqued a little bit of things there. So then years later, I was asked a question about it when I was in graduate school, and I didn't know how to answer the question about what there was metal in Africa. And I just decided to piece more together by asking friends and then realizing there's a whole vast world of it across different countries. Yeah, there were scenes that were already deeply rooted and they were already established. But in terms of academics, so there actually is an academic society for metal scholars.
Incredible.
The term metal scholar is actually a real thing now. Actually, their conference is coming up here in mid-June in France. It's International Society of Metal Music Studies. Scholars from all over the world.
Wow.
There's two that I know of in Australia.
Really? Oh, man, I've been living in a cave.
Yeah. Actually, one of the guys that spoke at a conference, he's originally from Vancouver, I believe, or somewhere there in Western Canada. Now he lives in Australia because he's teaching geography there with some Australian university. But his name is Simon Springer. I'll plug him because he's really good. But that is growing. In terms of what I do, there was really nothing done on the African continent. So, I mean, it's changing. I've been able to publish some academic papers now on African metal. There's various books that are peer-reviewed books. And there's even a journal that's a peer-reviewed journal just devoted to metal studies. And it's people dissecting – it's scholars dissecting lyrics, ideas, themes in metal, feminism, racism, social classes within metal – everything, like you name it. And that's what's great about academia. Like I said, all these varying interests, all these very niche interests sort of colliding into it, and a lot of other scholars who have a lifelong obsession with metal who are able to find a different outlet for it. This is always outside of their normal studies, right? So maybe they are sociologists or anthropologists or psychologists or religious studies. They come from religious studies backgrounds, or I know various metal scholars that are in the English departments at their university, but they're able to bring all that together. So that's changing quickly, which is really good.
It's awesome. I mean, I've been making some extra notes here. I've got some work to do after we finish talking, because when you explained it like that, it makes so much more sense, because metal as a genre of music is so unique compared to any other genre of music out there. And yes, like other styles of music have their subgenres and their niche sort of divisions here and there, but not to the extent of the metal genre. There are so many sort of classifications, subgenres, subgenres, and it gets ridiculous, but the communities and the different types of people and the connections that people have and the way that people interact with each other through all these different communities and as a global sort of audience as well, it's quite unique. It's a really unusual thing in certain aspects compared to a lot of other people that listen and appreciate music. So I can sort of understand why it could be a fascinating thing and why people are starting to take more of an interest and really dig into it deeper.
I think that's part of it. I mean, yeah, because it's always still ostracized no matter where you are. Even in our countries, I mean, you still it's still number one blame for whatever. We've had some unfortunate incidences, the Columbine massacre. Well, it must have been because they like metal.
Yeah.
Anytime there is some sort of a shooting, it's the heavy metal. Like if they're able to tie heavy metal into it, they're going right with it. Like we can't blame anything else in society but heavy metal. If you can blame many things in society, metal's the last thing you need to do. I tend to think metalheads are quite relaxed and per se. Like I think they found something that has, you know, that's able to calm them down. It does for me at least. But
I agree. I think majority of people that I've met sort of over the years of going to shows and traveling and touring, music in general, but especially metal, it's an outlet, and it's a way to sort of let go of everything else that could be mundane or taxing in their own lives and be able to sort of just immerse themselves in this world of music, which is filled full of narratives and like storylines and lots of exciting different things that are attached to it. It's not just the fact that I'm just going to turn on, play a song or watch a band play a song. There's just so much more attached to it, and even a sense of identity that's connected to it that people sort of really gravitate towards. So you got that community aspect and something that you can be proud of. And I think that takes a lot of that angst and tension away from people that might be directed in unhealthy ways if they didn't have those outlets. So I think it's a really sort of positive thing for the majority of people out there. And like anything, you'll have your outliers, but that's going to happen no matter what sort of community that you're in. But I've always seen it as a big positive, and as for me personally, getting into metal you know, in my early teens, and then going through my teens and trying to work out who I am and where I fit into the world. And metal was just that sort of that solid rock that sort of just kept the foundations there and kept you somewhat sane. And it was a great way to connect with people as well. And actually, a little bit of a segue back to something you said before, because it sort of fits into this. You mentioned like those first couple of times that you went over to Africa and you didn't know, your metal wasn't on the radar and you couldn't see anything around or anything like that. But you said that you started to meet metalheads over there, metal fans. Was it a case of that very stereotypical moment where you spotted somebody in a metal shirt and you sort of like pointed at them and gone, oh, like we've got something in common here? Was it something like that? Or was it just sort of through a mutual acquaintance that you connected with people over there?
First time I met, he was a complete stranger. The first metalhead I met is a guy named Craig in Cape Town. We're still buddies. I met him in at a record store. In a mall in Cape Town. I was just curious and just dropped into a record shop at I forget what it was called. It's a mall in at a highly visited area called the VA Waterfront in Cape Town, and it was I asked the attendant of the shop if they had any hard rock or heavy metal, and I was just curious, and I asked to see, like, because I was seeing if there's any local bands on the shelves. And then he laughed and he said, yeah, there's a handful of CDs like that over there. And he pointed, and I walked over there and I saw a CD from a band that I really like from Sweden called Dark Tranquility.
Yeah, cool.
They had just put out a new album at the time. It was their Fiction album. I think that was the album, yeah. And I kind of went and just wanted to do a curious grab and pick it up, and another hand was reaching for it at the same time. And that's Frank Craig.
That's yeah. Cool. I think that's...
And that's how we met. Actually, I let him buy it because it's like, I'll go back home and buy it anyway. But that's cool. And we hit it off. And he actually invited me that night to meet his other friends at a nearby pub. And then we ended up going to the movies that night to see... it's a documentary from the singer from System of a Down called Screamers, and it led me onto something. And a night or two later, they invited me to one of their homes, and they were showing me like South African metal bands.
Wow,
yeah, that was it. That was a very chance encounter, which I could honestly tell you had a great effect on the rest of my life.
Oh, easily, for sure. And it's just so cool because there's a million stories out there that have similar ingredients to what you've just explained, and obviously your set of circumstances would be very unique as far as location and just that moment in the record store. But it's funny because the only thing that you had was that connection that you both liked the same genre of music, and it seems so trivial and doesn't seem like there's much to it, but because the genre just happens to be metal, there's this instantaneous connection that most people are able to sort of latch onto straight away. And like, what other genre of music could you connect with straight away where somebody's like inviting you to the pub, to the movies, to their house, meet their friends, show them all the other bands in the area or in that part of the world? I mean, you'd be hard pressed to sort of find that same sort of set of circumstances with any other genre of music. Metal's just so weird like that. And it's just, I think people get so excited because, and maybe going back to what you said before, where I think metal always gets the blame for everything and there's still stigma attached to it. And it's an easy target. And I think people that do love metal feel it at times or have experienced, that whole going against the grain mentality. So when you do find somebody that shares the same passion for music, for metal, then you sort of latch on, you're like, oh, well, I'm going to talk to this person. And it gets really exciting because you've got that common interest where you sort of, it's us against the world.
Yeah, for sure. It is an identity. You said that earlier. Yeah. But it is. It's an identity for people all over the world. And we are always, we're not afraid to show it. I mean, how many metal shirts do you have? Yeah. It's almost like you put it out there. Not only are you wearing the shirt to support the band or because you really like the band, but you're also pulling it out as like your calling card. And you think metalheads are pretty chill and relaxed people to meet. Yeah, I always in my head. I'm sorry. Like real quick, am I shouting? Does it sound like I'm too loud?
No, you're okay.
Oh, okay. I feel like I'm. Yeah, okay. It's just. I think metal. In my head, at least, from my experience, is that metal's more of like an intellectual sort of genre. Mm. You kind of think that when I'm going to meet people that like metal, they're pretty well off mentally. Like, I mean, not like intellectually, I should say. They seem to have a better sense of the world around them. At least if they don't, they're willing to learn more about it because they understand that the bands that they like come from various corners of the world. I mean, someone who's been in the genre for quite a while. And they understand a lot of, I know a lot, like I think almost every single metalhead I know likes to read a lot for pleasure too, which is kind of cool. there's that. That's like a world of you just being able to blend in and find who you are through other people. And you do that. And that's metal's connection. I'm glad to note though, that metalheads all over the world seem to sort of all be in line.
I think, yeah. Absolutely. And I think, I mean, well, one of the questions I was actually going to ask you is about, I guess, the uniqueness of some of these bands that are coming out of Africa as a continent as a whole, because, you know, I think one of the reasons why a lot of metal fans love to read is because a lot of metal comes from story and narrative, and it comes from all these different places from around the world, both, you know, real life events and historical stuff, or it could be mythology or whatever it might be. And
sure,
like if you look at sort of a really easy targets like Scandinavia, so if you look at a lot of the music coming out of there and the storylines and the lyrical content and everything like that, for anybody that doesn't live in Scandinavia, it's this wonderland of not only just metal mecca, but these amazing stories and this wonder that's attached to it because of their they're singing about their history, their culture, and a lot of things that are attached to that. But I guess from your experiences now, you know, several years of traveling back and forth to Africa and meeting all these musicians in these bands, have you seen a lot of African bands doing similar sort of things in the context of their own culture and their own individual countries?
Not too much. It's starting to change. I could say, and I had a friend that years ago, a few years back, about 5-6 years ago, told me that this would happen. He just said, let it happen. And because I was frustrated. Not that I have any say in how the bands are going to sound, just so you know. Like, I don't go over there to tell them, you guys should be sounding like this.
Talent scout.
I do that. Okay? But I would ask every single musician, and they got exhausted and they knew to expect his questions. I told him, all our interviews are going to be catered differently, but you're going to be asked the same three questions that every single musician has been asking. One of them is exactly this. What can you do? Why isn't it happening? What sort of aspects of it are happening? And if anything, at first it was language. So some bands in South Africa are using Afrikaans. Mm. I mean, it's not many bands there anyway using that. Like in metal, I think I can name one band or two bands that have experimented with that language. And things like in Madagascar, they use their language heavily. And then in Kenya, there's this back and forth between using sort of Swahili that became an issue of debate within the country. It's pretty cool that those musicians were sort of discussing it. They were thinking about their own culture in a different way, critically. But musically, it's not happening. It's not happening at all. It's happened a little bit with a band from Botswana called Rust, who have a song called The Day of the Sacrifice, which is really, really cool, like groove metal track that has that sort of it starts with a traditional Setswana a clap. They use their hands as instruments in their culture. So you hear like a clapping sound and a chant on top of it. Which is really neat, like a call and response type chant. And that was the first time they ever did that. Another band in Botswana called Skinflint uses themes, African themes. They're not all Setswana. They're, you know, from other various interpretations of maybe the same aspect, like the dead or like a visit from a ghost and how in other African cultures. And I know that vocalist does that. I know he actually researches those lyrics while he's penning them to see like, well, how are the people of Mali responding to this aspect of like a person just dying and if the ghost is going to come visit them, that type of deal. And there's a band from Togo called Arkan. I believe that's how you pronounce it. They have a really cool sound going on. Their sound is probably more of what people are expecting from Africa. And that's the first band I've heard that's really just come full on by incorporating their traditional cultural instruments. And it's awesome.
I'm writing these down as we go.
yeah. They're cool. They spell their name Arkan.
Okay.
And their album's available on Bandcamp. It's got a beautiful cover, and it is just disgustingly good. it really sounds great. It's got a huge sound. It's so well mixed, so well produced. But it's really unique that they're starting to do that. I could say that may be the first sub-Saharan band that I can tell you that she's going full on with that idea of being an African, quote-unquote, African metal band. It's not going to be a sound, right? We use these terms like female fronted or Afro-punk, but it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't still tell you what the band sound like. I think that's what African metal is going to be. But if I'm going to say what I'm going to define as African metal, it's a band that's not afraid to reach into their own closet to pull out the instruments that have been sitting there since they were kids, probably.
Yeah.
Or they're not afraid to reach back into the culture that some were brought up with. Bear in mind that the cities that these bands are located in are fairly cosmopolitan centers anyway. So for the listeners, I mean, if you have an idea that all of Africa is exactly the same, it's not. If you're listening to this from a major city or a bigger city or a bigger town, that's exactly what the African settings are too. Just look around what you're looking at. That's what they're looking at too.
That's it. So, very, very westernized in a lot of areas.
Yeah, so if you think about, like, if you grow up in a city like Nairobi, Kenya, you're not going to have that. That's not a part of you. Like, the cable television, cell phone culture is very much a part of you. Meeting people from all over the world because you have a lot of international offices and organizations and agencies that are camped out in your city, you're going to meet that too. And going to eat at an Argentine steakhouse for dinner with your friends is something that's quite common, as opposed to, you know, just being stuck away. So you have that very cosmopolitan upbringing, and so when you embrace metal, you're hearing stuff. You're hearing the same bands that everyone around the world will listen to, you know, from the West. You're listening to Natal, you know, like in Kenya. I remember, like, you know, Slipknot, Trivium. One of the bands told me they're big fans of Darkest Hour, which is one of my all-time favorite bands ever. And it's like, all right, so you guys sort of grew up with the same bands I did. You guys are all in the same bands I'm into. So naturally, you're going to want to sound just like that. That's your template for what you feel your sound should be. And you're defining your band as a metalcore band or as a thrash metal band or as a death metal band or progressive metal band, which is more in line with what Western band, which is exactly in line with basically heavy metal's code. If you're defining it and you're using the same instruments, so your electric guitar, your electric bass, your drums, and you have vocalists, and sometimes you have a keyboard, sometimes you don't, but that's basically you're just adhering to that code of what metal is. So that's part of it right there. I think it's going to take a while, but I think it took a while for the Scandinavian bands to really embrace their Scandinavian-ness. If that's a real word.
Absolutely. Yeah. They definitely went through those stages of really sort of basically just embracing unashamedly their influences, the bands that they've listened to, you know, or been exposed to from other parts of the world. And that's the framework that they started with. And then over time they evolved and put their own touches, their own uniqueness to it.
I think what happened, and maybe your listeners aren't aware, but there was a band from a really popular band from Brazil called Sepultura.
Yeah,
they erupted onto the world as, you know, one of the best thrash metal bands ever, and they're still around. They're still active. They haven't slowed down at all. But they released a series of albums that I think are some of the best heavy metal records ever recorded, Arise and then Chaos AD. And then they put out this record, and it's the only record they've ever released in their catalog that sounds like this, and it's called Roots. Mm. And if you're not familiar, if you're listening, you're not familiar, Sepultura Roots. So Sepultura is a band from Brazil, but Roots is an album that dug into them experimenting with the sounds that were around them, not particularly to their culture because they're all of European descent. They went into the Amazon and started recording with the Zavante group, and they used their traditional instruments. They actually sometimes just put a microphone in the middle of a ceremony that they were using, and they recorded it live, and you could hear, and it's a pretty cool thing. And they use the instrumentations of those of the indigenous groups of Brazil on that record, and it's really well known. I believe it's probably their best selling album of their career. It's one of the most reviewed heavy metal albums ever recorded. But it's that one record, when I'm speaking to audiences in the West, this is what they're sort of expecting from African bands. Well, why aren't they just doing what Sepultura did with Roots? I mean, they don't even have to really try to make an effort. That's just who they are. Like, they have these, like, that's a bit presumptuous of us to just assume that that's who they are, though, right?
Yeah,
because they're sure. Yeah, because they're from Kenya or whatever country that they should sound like this, because Sepultura had to make an effort. These guys don't. Like, no, it's still a leap forward. It's still an experiment. And if we're ready for it or not in metal, I think we are. But I don't think that record from Sepultura ruined it. I think it's a beautiful record, but I think it's just now it's become this sort of level of expectations for bands that are from the quote unquote other corners of the world that's not Europe or North America or even Australia, because you guys are a fairly Western place. But I mean, is the onus on you to sort of reach into the Aboriginal culture, into your metal group?
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely should be, in some cases it should be thought about or at least discussed. I mean, we've got a couple of bands that have really sort of embraced our sort of indigenous history, and we've got I can never get their name right, but it's something like, I'm gonna have this guy on the podcast eventually, but it's something like Southern Desert, Western Desert Metal, or something like that. And they're all Aboriginal guys that are from Alice Springs in the dead center of Australia, and they've got a metal band, and they're doing really, really well, and their sound is just classic metal riffs. So there's nothing sort of terribly indigenous about their sound, but their lyrical content and everything is about their culture and their upbringing and things like that. But at the same time, I guess, just to sort of go off the back of what you said, I definitely can appreciate that, you know, the expectations put on people because of their location in the world can definitely be a hindrance and can be a disadvantage, because people aren't focusing on exactly what these people are capable of. Instead they're putting expectations on what we believe that somebody should sound like. And
right. And instead of looking at it as saying, well, these people are just like me and they're from this country that I may have just heard of.
That's
right. But instead of saying that they're just like me, you're saying, why aren't they different?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's part of the problem. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, do you think that would be one of the reasons, or probably one of the many reasons, but one of the reasons why there has been a very sort of slow build up with, I guess, the exposure of African bands in the global sort of audience, as far as people taking an interest and looking to see what is going on in the continent?
Perhaps. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think part of it still, it's a novelty for Westerners, especially if you're not in the metal, you're just looking from afar and you're just like, oh my gosh, they've never seen an all black metal band. They probably have never even seen it from their own countries, or even a black member in a metal band, but just seeing an all black African band, it's like, it's been a bit of a novelty. I thought it was at first. I was quite uncomfortable with it, and I was worried that I took a step back. I was like, what am I doing? That wasn't my intention, but there was a series of photographs that exploded from the metal scene of Botswana.
Yeah, so then.
Yeah, 2012, 2013. My friend Frank Marshall took took these beautiful photos, and you know, they just sort of just exploded. They were getting in a lot of publications, and I wrote an article for the Guardian newspaper in the United Kingdom about the scene that were accompanied by quite a few of his photographs. And I mean, just the comments, it's like, oh my gosh, this is not what I wanted to do. You know, it wasn't drawing attention to the bands, wasn't drawing attention to the efforts of the musicians really trying to build a scene and to maybe even establish a career for themselves in music. It was just, look at these people. They're black playing metal. This is crazy. You've never seen anything like this. It was the complete opposite of what we wanted. I think it's sort of settling itself into it now. Amongst metal fans, they've become more comfortable with the idea of seeing African metal, mostly because the bands that they're hearing first, like we said, they don't sound that way. They sound just like a thrash metal band or a metalcore band or death metal, whatever it is that they want to sound like. And that, I think that's the best way forward. But you know, a band shouldn't have to be a different person for you because they're from a different place of the world either.
Well, I think that's when you start to make assumptions about individuals or people, you know, color of their skin, their background, their culture, etc. And then
that's it, though. But I mean, when it comes to Africa, we always have a perceived level of ignorance with the continent.
I do, big time.
I say we because I've met plenty of Australians. Living in London, you meet lots of Australians.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I don't mean any here in Pennsylvania, but I mean the Western world is just locked, dead, center and focused on what they feel the African continent really is, and it's really not. And it's just locked away with that. It's just so bizarre how people still think of Africa the way they do. But I've been selling my book. I've been getting messages from people who don't even like metal that have read my book and have thanked me very much. For at least changing their mind about what they thought Africa was, which is great. I did a speaking engagement in Ohio, in Western Ohio, and a girl, she came up. I say girl, but she was in a university, like a, you know, an undergraduate student, as we say here. And she said that the first time she'd ever read about Africa, and she was completely moved by what she read because she had plenty of assumptions, which were all shattered right away. When I'm describing the Johannesburg Pretoria mix that is there with the massive highway systems and the conglomerates of like two cities just sort of colliding with each other and building this big massive mega 13 million plus people city. And she's like, yeah, that's not what I expected. I did not expect nice homes with swimming pools. I'm just being honest with you. And I'm like, I'm really glad I read your book. It's like, good. But that's part of the problem. It's not just metalheads, obviously. This is a whole global issue. But
did you sort of have that in mind when you were putting the book together, or was it sort of more after the fact, or when you're sort of getting to the end of sort of wrapping the book up, ready to put it out there into the world, that you sort of had this in mind? Or like, has this always been there?
I made a promise to myself that I wouldn't sugarcoat anything. I wanted to be completely honest with the readers, and I wanted to be completely honest with the musicians that I was there. And all I did was ask them for their honesty in return. I still fact checked them like any writer. I was still transcribing all the interviews, still double checking the facts with them, and then going to other sources to check that the things that they were telling me were true, like certain events of the country's history in Kenya, like the Saba Saba events. And I was verifying all the events that happened, you know, during apartheid and all these things. And yeah, they were pretty accurate anyway. But I promised them that I wouldn't do it. And I think the one place that in the book that I visit is Madagascar. It's a chapter 4. That was just like an eye-opening experience for sure. But I wasn't going to sugarcoat that. That was the poorest place I've ever been to. It was the poorest place I've ever seen. And it gave me a better appreciation for what it is that the musicians do there and how they go about setting, you know, working around their poverty, how they go about doing what they do. And it ended up being one of the biggest scenes I've ever seen. I think I do say it in the book. I believe that that is the deepest rock and metal scene in the whole continent, in Madagascar.
And for anybody that's I'll just talk on behalf of myself, really. I mean, it would be the last place in the world that you would expect to to have anyone that even listens to metal, let alone plays in a band and or has a scene there. But I mean, that goes back to what we said before about making these assumptions.
It was so weird. I was kind of like you. I was like, what am I going to find in Madagascar? And I only started digging because I caught a glimpse of a video on YouTube of a band in Madagascar. And I don't even remember how I met this kid on Facebook who features prominently in that chapter because he was my translator. And I said, what am I going to do? I'm going to fly to Madagascar for 2 months and meet like 6 bands. And then I'm going to have all this time to kill in Madagascar. But okay, fine. I've never been there. So let's check it out. I had one freaking day off. Every day, and I had to schedule that day off. I begged him. I said, we're not going to book anyone to interview that day because we need to rest. And he didn't understand why I was doing that. And then after that day, we both woke up like at 3 in the afternoon. Like, see why we needed a day off?
Wow.
I was completely surprised. I could not stop. Like, everyone, there were like 60, 70 bands. And it was in every city, like the cities we went to, there were just scenes that were just like, how many freaking bands are there? And the biggest bands in the country were playing in stadiums, man.
Wow.
I'm not exaggerating this. Like, you could just YouTube that. That's what I tell people, that they don't know how to YouTube that, but like, it's just insane. And the crowds are singing along to all the songs, or their rock songs or anthems in Madagascar, man. It's like insane. Young metal bands are covering like Malagasy rock bands from the 80s that are still active, or early 90s that are still active.
Wow.
That's like a sort of rite of passage, like, because that's what they grew up with too. It's insane, man. That's like, Madagascar is the rock country of the world. And I'm saying that, and I'm boldly saying that, and I'm not afraid to say it because I can verify that. That's just, you know, yes, it's an opinion, but that is the most rocking country on this planet. I could write a whole book on its own about heavy metal music in Madagascar. And maybe I still can, you know.
Well, it's kind of,
but that was insane. And I actually just thought about just pulling 2 chapters of this, South Africa and Madagascar, and making them their own books, and then making the rest of the book a whole nother collection.
Well, that was going to be one of the questions I was going to ask you, is that because the book's been out for a little while now, I was thinking, you know, off the feedback that you've had from people and just, I guess, having time to sort of digest everything and sort of go through that process of, you know, this is a long sort of journey that you went on to sort of compile all this and a lot of time put into it. But now sitting back and looking at it all, sort of thinking, what else is there? And so just hearing what you said, it sounds like there's more than enough ideas of putting additional things out to sort of dig into these parts of the world in further detail.
Yeah, and more bands have formed in these countries, and more countries now have bands. It just wasn't when I started. I think part of it was that people were apprehensive to talk to me, or at least at first. And people were actually apprehensive to even say that they were in metal bands in the countries that they were in. Like, they found their clique of friends that played instruments and they started a band with, but they were sort of afraid to kind of step out, whether it was because of some, maybe a cultural hindrance in their country, or you know, maybe whatever societal norms of how we perceive metal fans, or how, you know, I know that they're viewed with a different cloud over there in some countries, but, you know, the countries that are used to it, like I said, Madagascar, Kenya, well, not Kenya yet, but South Africa, like Botswana. It's cool to be in a rock band and a metal band in those countries, but, you know, not cool, but it's like, it's okay.
it's somewhat slightly accepted compared to probably what it was years ago.
Better accepted. Yeah. Especially like in Botswana, they've really embraced that rock culture, but they have, I've been hearing from more, and I've been getting invited to more, like, there's a black metal festival in Cameroon now. There's,
wow.
That band Togo from Togo has been playing in Ghana, and they've been playing in Burkina Faso. It was like, oh, there's more going on that I didn't even know of before. There's a scene now kicking up in Nigeria. So yeah, it just keeps spreading. So like you said, there's been more of an invitation. And musicians in Africa are quick to tell me, and like, they're now that they know I took them seriously. Like, I wasn't there to patronize them. Which I ran into early on, that they weren't sure why I was there. And at least in Botswana, I wasn't the first Westerner that went to interview bands. I know CNN had beat me there. Not that I was scooped, but Frank Marshall's photos really just took off. And so CNN went to Botswana to interview Frank Marshall, who is not from Botswana, by the way. He's from South Africa, but he went back just to sit for the interview. And they could tell you that, like, it's in getting emails from journalists from afar, like from a European country, that they're talking about stuff and they realize that it was almost patronizing. And yeah, they were worried when I was there until they realized I was actually like a real metalhead. Mm. I can talk shop about metal all day and night. Like, try me, you know? So they were more than happy to do that, because after the interview, like, they would ask, or before, like, to some musicians were really nervous. They would ask, you know, can we listen to a metal record just to kind of get loose? I'm like, yeah, let's go. Like, I'm more than happy to do it. Like, I got some metal bands that you've never even heard of that will blow your mind away too, if you want some good recommendations. Like, yeah, yeah. So that's how we spent most of our time. You know, because I'm quite in tune with the American underground, so you get to introduce some new bands to some people that they've never heard of some of these bands. But I'm more of the aggressive metal fan. You know, I was weaned on hardcore, and I've always liked aggressive metal, like thrash and whatnot. Now I'm really into like doom and black metal and whatnot. So yeah,
it's just it's so cool to see. It just to see the impact of the music and just get, like, sort of taking it full circle with a lot of the things we've been talking about, is just that connection that can just be made no matter what background you are, where you come from in the world, and just being able to find that common ground really easily. And something as simple as somebody saying, hey, can we just listen to a bit of metal just to sort of loosen up a bit? It's not an unusual thing to hear when you sort of have been through it yourself, you know, meeting people for the first time or in an environment where there's somebody that's like-minded and likes the same sort of music. And once you get talking about your favorite bands or a common band or listening to something that you both enjoy, or some heavy riffs or some guitar solos or whatever, then suddenly it's like, oh wow, like, okay, now we've got a connection, now we can sort of move forward together. And it's just super cool. I mean, our band, I mean, Lords played a lot through Asia, and we've got a real big history in Japan, and we've been playing there for, I think the first time we played there was 2003, and we've been going back quite a bit ever since. So we've played there, I don't know, I've been back there about 12 or 13 times over the years, but I think we played there about 5 or 6 times. And we played through Southeast Asia as well, and it's amazing. I mean, Japan's always had that reputation since the 70s of really embracing Western music, and it's opened them up a lot. And you've got all the famous Live at Budokan and all these Live in Japan and the jokes about, you know, only big in Japan and things like that. But watching it sort of flow over into other parts of Asia, and especially Southeast Asia over the last decade, I mean, extreme metal's massive in Indonesia and Malaysia, and China's starting to open up, and bands are playing in Hong Kong, and you know, South Korea, there's a whole scene over there. And just it's incredible just to see that places in the world where you would have no prior connection, you know, you might go there as a tourist and walk around the landmarks and see the sights, and then go back to your hotel and just, you know, talk to your friends or whoever you're traveling with. Now there's like this mechanism, this thing that exists that just brings these people together that you would just never have any prior connection, when you probably should. But it's like me with this podcast. I use this podcast as a reason to connect with people that I normally wouldn't get the chance or think about talking to. And metal does the same thing with people all over the world. And it's just so cool just to hear these stories and just realize, they're the same stories that a lot of other people have.
No, it is cool. You said it's a beautiful mechanism to connect. It's just, it's there. And for us being in the metal culture, we get it. You know, if you're listening and you don't know metal, you understand that this is such a global genre and a global family that you walk into a bar in Hong Kong or a pub or whatever, you've never met these people. You don't even know their language that they're speaking. And yet you're you're sucked into that world of commonality now. You have this beautiful connection, and it's something that's – it's a bond that is there to forge – you know, you can forge your friendships that way.
Suddenly you find yourself air guitaring at 2 o'clock in the morning at some pub somewhere after several beers.
Yeah. It's fascinating too is how in Madagascar they don't speak English at all, but they still knew the lyrics. They listen to the record so much that they can phonetically repeat what they're hearing, but they didn't actually know what they were saying. And that was the best. I mean, that was one of those things. It's like, pinch me. This is real. It absolutely humbles you because I put so much in a perspective as to where I came from and how I grew up and where I grew up, and realizing, where are you now? Look at you. Like, look at your surroundings. Look at who you're with. This is what's happening. Like, this is real. And, you know, it all just sort of hits you, and you can be overwhelmed by it. Like, you have to have moments, to yourself where you're just completely overwhelmed by what you're experiencing. And it's just beauty of humanity. And I had that connection because of heavy metal. That was really cool.
I think it's super inspiring and just makes me want to keep connecting with more and more people with the same interests in heavy music, because it's just, I mean, I remember those first experiences when, you know, I was a kid and I'd start to branch out and find people that normally without the music connection, I could not imagine any connection or anything that I could connect with that person over. And finding myself in these situations multiple times, and I can think of many occasions, like in varying parts of the world or even just at home, like in my local area, where suddenly I'm talking to somebody and just thinking in the moment, going, wow, I'm having like this interaction with somebody over music, and it's the music that's brought us together having this conversation right now. And I realized that actually we're really, really similar compared to what I thought probably moments earlier. And that's just been a repetitive thing over the years, and it's continued to challenge me and challenge, you know, the things that we were saying at the beginning about, you know, perceptions and stereotypes and assumptions about lots of people, and like people from all over the world and lots of different countries and backgrounds. And it's just been a great way to sort of get better as a person and develop and get a more of an open mind and a bit more compassion for other people, because you realize that we're far more similar than we like to think sometimes.
Yeah, actually we're very similar. That's that goes without saying. You just said something though. I know it's your podcast and you're interviewing me, but you said something about how you feel it makes you a better person.
Yeah.
I've always thought that too. I'm glad I'm not alone with that thought. Like, I wonder, like, if it wasn't, maybe that we have the type of personalities that if it really wasn't for heavy metal, like, what would have come of us?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've definitely had those thoughts in the past where I think, so as you said before, like, you know, you go through that thought exercise of, you know, look at your surroundings, look at everything around you. And so I can sit here in my home, and I've got a wife that's gone to bed because she couldn't be bothered staying up late tonight. But, you know, I've got a wife, I've got all these things in my life. I've got this band, I've got the podcast, I've got all this stuff. And the funny thing about it is that almost everything, I can draw a line back to metal. I can draw a line back to music, because if I look at that chain of events, it comes from an interaction with somebody. It comes from a CD that I got, or a record that I found in a store that I just liked the look of the album cover, that suddenly attracted me. And I thought, okay, I'm going to spend the money and just wing it and see what happens. And
yeah,
that's given me the confidence then to look into it more. That's given me the confidence to actually stop somebody at a show or on the street that's wearing a metal t-shirt and say something and have this interaction. So you start to become better at socializing, you get better people skills. And so it just becomes this snowball effect where everything that I do in life has come from metal. And it sounds so cheesy when you say it like that, but it's very true. I mean, a lot of the things that I have, the qualities that I've been able to develop, the skills that I have, the the achievements that I've had and just the good things that I have in my life, of I can easily find links back to the formative years of discovering metal and that as that word we said before, that mechanism to sort of really develop and become a better person incrementally over time. So it's and I'm sure people that don't listen to metal can find their own path, but there's just so many positives that are attached to this genre of music that it's just, and I think a lot of us take it for granted because we don't stop and think about it.
It is quite special, and you said it gives you confidence, man. I mean, look, I traveled through Africa on, you know, because of metal.
I don't know if I could do that, but then again, like if it was a metal, like that would probably inspire.
That was one of the things that kept motivating me was just, come on, man, it's metal. There's more to it, and it's, you don't even really have to like the same type of bands either. You have that world. Like, I can't judge metal fans if someone tells me they're metalhead and they like Five Finger Death Punch, is a band that I despise. But I'm still not going to judge you for liking them because you're connecting to something. You're connecting to a form of art, another person's vision that, as you feel, makes you a better person. And it's heavy. It's heavy music. It's distorted guitar driven music. And that's, hey, I'm with you, man.
For sure. Well, I'm keeping on the time, but one thing that I wanted to ask you before we wrap it up, because I've got a lot of musicians that listen to the podcast as well as, well, I've got a mixed bag these days, but I've definitely got a lot of metal musicians that listen. And it's one thing that's always on my mind as well. And in listening to you talk about, metal in Africa, and as I dig deeper into the book, I'm going to learn a lot more about it. But I guess from a metal musician and a band, sitting in other parts of the world that are sort of got our eyes sort of on the continent and looking at the number of countries there. I mean, what's your sort of perspective on it all, as far as what should we be doing as far as, I guess, helping to open the door? And I know, sort of thinking about what you said earlier, as far as give it time and they've got to do their thing in their own respective countries. But is there anything that we can sort of be doing to sort of be connecting more with a lot of these bands? I mean, are there resources out there that musicians can sort of look into to discover a lot more of these bands, just to be able to connect even from a fan point of view?
I think there's like a I could just answer it by just treat the bands from Africa as any other band. But I think when you're just trying to find them and discovering them, you're using the same resources. They're putting themselves out there through the YouTubes and the band camps and the Facebooks, and they're doing their best to reach out. And I don't know if I can answer this question succinctly.
Well, it's not, I guess it's probably not an easy thing, because there's so many, I mean, even just sort of in the early stages of this book, I've realized really quickly how complex it is there. Like, it's like someone talking about European metal, and it's like, well, what is European metal? There's a large number of countries that are comprised of Europe, but Europe's part of that, and they've all got their own cultures, they've all got their own complexity, they've all got their different styles of music and genres and things like that. And I guess Africa's the same way. It's sort of, you can't just brush it with the same stroke. And although we're talking about them all, we're all playing metal, and we should all be treating each other the same way. I guess it's probably just not like a one answer sort of thing as far as what can be done or what the outsiders can do to try and help, sort of expose a lot of these great bands to more people. I don't know where I'm going with this, because it's a really fascinating thing for me. And I think you sort of made me think a lot more about, I guess, even my assumptions about metal in other parts of the world that, I guess, and I'll dare to say it. I mean, when I first sort of even saw the term heavy metal Africa, I thought that it is a bit of a novelty, it's certainly made me think, because I'm quite excited about digging into this a lot more, but you definitely want to approach it the right way.
There's some of these bands are getting really good coverage. I mean, like I said, I mentioned CNN, but like CNN, BBC, France's Channel 4, Dutch television, German television, Finnish television have all been in Botswana. And I always think that, that's a good start. And you could, depending on, I don't even know if Aussies have done it, but I mean, you can always look up this stuff just by typing in like a Botswana heavy metal or something, and it's hoping that those bands, like if you look up the bands individually, they can lead to something else, like that rabbit hole of YouTube, which is amazing.
Yeah,
absolutely. Isn't that like the worst rabbit hole that exists?
Yeah, definitely. And depending on the topic that you choose, it can be devastating.
yeah, because I always like seeing bands perform songs live, and it's like, oh, there you go, we're done.
And I mean,
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a really good question. I don't even know if I can answer it succinctly, but discover, because you have to search things out. Metalheads know you have to find it. You have to go looking for it. It's not just doesn't land on your lap unless a friend puts it on your lap for you.
Yeah, for sure.
It's tough. I'm sorry I wasn't able to answer that question maybe the way you wanted me to.
No, not at all. It's perfect because it's honest, but also I think it sort of shows that it's not just a knee-jerk reaction sort of answer to the question. You know, it's sort of like this is, you know, there's a lot to it. There's a lot to consider. There's a lot to think about. And at the same time, it's also very simplistic in the sense that it's the same way that you would discover any band in the world, you know, and you do your research and you look it up. And maybe that's probably the biggest takeaway, is that you don't have to treat it uniquely and think that there's, you know, this complicated way of trying to, or this unique way of trying to connect. It's exactly the same as anywhere else in the world. So that's probably the big thing that I'm sort of taking away from a lot of the things that we're talking about. The other thing I was going to ask as well, can you see, because I mean, how many countries are in Africa? Is it 50 something? I don't know how 54. Many. 54?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously not every country at this point in time has some presence of you know, a metal scene or anything like that. But can you see at some stage, years, decades, or whenever it is down the track, that there could be a viable touring circuit, not only, and I'm sure that there are bands within the continent that have their own touring circuit within a few different countries, but can you see that there would be eventually a potential viable touring circuit for international bands to go over there and play more than, I guess, than just South Africa, so to speak, but to be able to sort of get out there and play more spots?
Yeah, that's long been the goal of a lot of the you know, the musicians on the ground and the promoters. You know, that's long been the goal. It's just being taken seriously. Mm. You know, that validation that comes from years of working and getting your favorite bands to come in, the matter of taking it seriously. And of course, you know, you're in a touring band. Is it financially viable?
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, you hate to say it, when you cross into that line where it's not a hobby anymore and it's a job, you play that business, you have to play that business game. You have to understand that we can't just go to these places if we're not going to walk out with some money in our pocket. Cause most bands, I wish more bands were willing to just suck it up. If you're going to play in Johannesburg, why don't you drive to a few hours that it takes to get to the capital of Botswana and just pop up and do a free show there too? Mm. You know, and they just won't do that. I spoke to a band about trying to do that. I won't tell you what band it is, but I mean, they were playing a big show in Johannesburg and they were interested in more. And I said, well, if you're willing to do it for free, I know people would love to have you. But they're like, no, we don't play for free. That's like our thing. We just don't do that. Like, this is our job, man. That does, playing for free doesn't pay my bills. I'm like, all right, I get it. But like, okay, it's getting there. I mean, we have, let's go over real quick. We have Johannesburg and Cape Town. South Africa has a viable touring circuit and it's been open now, and you name it has been there. Besides Maiden and Metallica, even the underground bands, at the outset that maybe it wasn't recorded, we talked about a few Australian bands having come over to South Africa for the touring. And Kenya is starting now. They've started to get bands in from Europe and America. Stick to Your Guns played there.
Yeah, wow.
There's a Nairobi Metal Festival, which is actually organized by a German.
Hmm.
I've met him. We've had a good long talk about things now for a bit. Cool. There have been bands from America, wasn't it Conquest for Death? I think they played in Botswana and Namibia as well. There used to be the Windhoek Metal Festival, which was organized for an American band to come in. But that's already gone. So the Nairobi Metal Festival is hoping to get to that point where it just can become that one thing where he can't really afford to do things. And I don't know what financial arrangements he makes with the acts, but he runs a charity out of Germany called Hardcore Help. And so he's more in line with that type of music.
Hmm.
So he's been booking hardcore bands from Europe. Like and that one band, Stick to Your Guns, who's quite well known from California. They've played in Nairobi now. That's changing. Before that, their international scene was booking Borgasm from Johannesburg and Skinflint from Kenya, from Botswana to go and play in Kenya. So, and this year too, at the Nairobi Metal Festival, a band from Botswana called Overthrust will be there. Which is cool because Overthrust has done Wacken and they've done two tours of Europe now. I caught up with them 2 years ago in Germany. So they've been used to doing that touring circuit now. And this is really cool for them to be able to play in another corner of Africa that they haven't been to yet. And there was a festival in Morocco, which I don't talk about North Africa in my book, but there's a festival in Morocco that's had, I think Arch Enemies played there and Dark Tranquility and Sepultura have played in Morocco as part of this festival that's gone on in Morocco, which is not a metal festival per se, Le Boulevard, but they have metal bands play there. So that's opening up a bit more over there too in North Africa, which it needs to more than Sub-Sahara because they had some issues with metalheads and how they treat metalheads and arresting metalheads. So those are the ways forward. I do hope that it happens. I hope that it happens. And it's a two-way street. It's not just the bands. It's not just the promoters in the African countries. It's got to be the Western bands understanding that how viable the scenes in these countries are. And there's a market for you there. There's an audience for you there. And it's still – since it's not still overly saturated, you're probably still going to get a whole ton of people to show up to watch your bands play. When they get to the point where they're just, oh gosh, they're coming in like crazy, that you can just pick and choose, like, oh, we're not going to go to these shows, we're just going to go see this band, you know.
It sounds like in Australia, I mean, years and years ago, we would get a handful of international bands each year because it was too expensive to fly down here, or the perception was it was too far, and it's a hell of a trip to get down here, but we hardly got any bands. And so when bands came out, I mean, I found myself going to every metal show I possibly could, even if the band wasn't a band that I was terribly familiar with or the genre wasn't 100% what I liked. But I was just so excited just that there was metal bands touring. And a lot of other people are in the same boat. But these days, the floodgates have opened. I mean, we've got a regular touring circuit here in Australia where people are coming down to Asia and they're playing in Asia and then they just tag on an Australian leg straight after it. And I hear it from my friends, my peers, where they turn around and say, I'm not going to go to that. I've just bought tickets for the next five or six shows. I can't go to this one. And they start picking and choosing and whatever it is. And I wouldn't say we're oversaturated, but we're definitely going in that direction where, like, I remember the first time I went to Europe years and years ago and we were at a Megadeth show and it wasn't sold out. And it was a fairly decent sized venue, but it wasn't sold out. And we're talking to some locals, and I think it was in Stuttgart, and we said, oh, I was expecting a few more people. And they said, yeah, Blind Guardian played here last night. And then in 2 nights' time, we've got, I think, Creator and something else, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, they know Megadeth's going to be back in like 6 months' time for the next touring circuit through summer or something like that. So a lot of people are just going to sit and wait. And I just couldn't get my head around it. I thought, wow, like so many bands playing within the space of a few days and people wishing to skip a band and wait a few months for them to come back. It was such a weird thing for me to hear. But now it's common for people to take that approach even here in Australia. So when you said that, I thought, oh yeah, that hits close to home.
Yeah, that's what was happening in Johannesburg, because it just opened. And now, like, you just see the list of bands that have played there. They still dwell on the bands that haven't played there, like Megadeth or Machine Head or Slipknot or Gojira, right? And they're like, oh, but then they're like telling me about all the other bands they've come. Like, you're not at that point yet where like, ah, we'll wait to the next album because, you know, we don't like this one. Hopefully your next album's better. We'll just go see him play for that one. They haven't gotten to that point yet, but that's what can easily happen. It just, yeah. But Western bands need to pony it up. Like, if you're, I don't know. Like, what I think maybe it is just money. Maybe that's the reason why. Or if they're curious and you're willing to take a little bit of a loss just to go play in a city like Nairobi for the first time, then go.
Oh, man.
It'll be a memorable experience.
I would love to do that. I would love to do it.
I know, and it's the first time you're ever – bands have played in front of a primarily black audience too.
Oh, it'd be just such an experience, and especially I think I think of our band collectively, and none of us have ever ventured into the continent of Africa at all. And I think just the experience of being there and then going to a couple of these countries just to get a little taste of what it's like would just be such an experience. And then to be able to do it playing metal is just like the best combination.
Yeah. And it's, there was that video that went around a few years ago that it led to me responding to, some comments. So I wrote an article for Metal Injection about it, but it was about when Stick to Your Guns actually did play in Kenya and how the place just went nuts. And it was like, it was the first time they've ever seen a band play there. No, it wasn't. It was just the first time Stick to Your Guns had played in Kenya. Yeah. But remember just the crowd going nuts. And it's like, yeah, you're going to get that response right away, because it's like, oh, wow, this band is willing to come here to us. They're willing to take our scene seriously. They're willing to take our interest seriously. This is how we're going to respond. And it was a magical moment. I wasn't there, but I saw the video, and I know people that were there. They were telling me all about the experience of having that band come there. But it was, you know, what took so long for a band like them to take that scene seriously? Simply, they were just asked. They were just asked to come, and they responded to it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, and there's bands that are willing to bend over and do things like that. Like, yeah, we're going to do this for them. Yeah, we're not going to make that much money. We'll make our guarantees elsewhere. But we'll do this one time because this is a great experience for us and for them. So everyone won that night, as far as I'm concerned, yeah.
Well, I'm inspired, and I'm going to start scheming a way that Lord can go and play in a couple of countries in Africa, because, even just, as I said, I've started reading your book, and just – my eyes are just being opened instantly with a lot of things in there. It's definitely challenging a lot of views that I had, because I've never really sort of bothered to dig in much into what metal is and what it looks like in some of these countries. And it's just, it's really, really exciting. And just being able to talk to you now and just get a little bit more perspective and shading on it all, it's just, it's super cool, and I'm keen to start digging through the depths of Bandcamp for bands throughout Africa, and just start immersing myself in it all, because there's no doubt a lot of cool stuff to listen to.
Yeah, we'll get Oh, that's cool. I'll get you some links, so we'll get your audience interested in too.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And before we wrap it up, of course, so people that, and I'll put links in the show notes anyway, so it's nice and easy, but what's the best way to connect with you and to pick up a copy of the book as well?
It's available. Heavy Metal Africa is available on Amazon Australia site. Mm-hmm. So it's available too on your electronic readers if you prefer the Kindles.
Yep.
So that's how I know Heavy Metal Africa is available in Australia. That's the only, yeah, I'm sure. I don't know if any bookstores are carrying it or not. I'm not familiar. I haven't really heard much from Australia. So it's cool to be able to speak to you about this. So I'm glad I hit your continent and country. But yeah, it's been really cool. But thanks for your support, man.
No, I appreciate it.
If you want to reach out to Edward, you can go to the show notes over at andysocial.net. You can go and check out the book Heavy Metal Africa. I'm going to have a bunch of links in the show notes. You can purchase it via Amazon, the paperback and also the Kindle version. And you can also follow Edward on all the social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and there's also pages for Heavy Metal Africa as well. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, there are a bunch of links to Bandcamp pages and video clips and everything like that in the show notes that refer to a whole bunch of bands that we discussed in this podcast and bands that are referenced in the book as well. So make sure you go and check all that out. Digest all this great music that's coming from what has been seen as really unusual places. But as you would have heard in this chat, it's a place that's just evolving the same way as everywhere else in the world when it comes to heavy metal. And so it's about time that more of us take the continent of Africa and its music more seriously. So I'm looking forward to digging in deeper as well. So go and check it all out over at andysocial.net in the show notes, or click through on your podcast player. Why not? Updates, 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 updates. Lord, Lord, Lord. Okay, so when it comes to the Lord Camp, Fallen Idols, the new album, I'm hoping that by the time this episode comes out on May 30th, there should be a release date confirmed and announced. Fingers crossed. As I'm recording this only a few days prior, we are in the final stages of locking in this deal, and I'm hoping that we can get it all over the line very quickly. So fingers crossed. For people that haven't been listening over the past several weeks and months, the reason why there's been so many delays with announcing more details around the new album is we've been negotiating with several labels in Japan. And we've had this great relationship in Japan over the past 20 odd years. It's, you know, both Dungeon and Lord. And for whatever reason, this album has sparked more interest than any other release in the past. I don't know what's going on over there. I don't know what they're talking about, but for whatever reason, they're all fighting over each other with this album in the background. So very interesting things going on, which has meant a lot of unexpected delays. And it's been an exciting period of time, but it's also been painful, challenging, getting emotional, character building. There's been a lot of moments along the way where I've just been sort of, I think we've been pushed out of our comfort zone a little bit with just some interesting discussions with people. This hasn't involved just Japan. It's involved other places around the world and other relationships. And it's weird how things are connected. Very, very interesting. And hopefully one day in a podcast, one day down the track, I'll talk about it all because it is quite fascinating. But at the moment, it will stay under wraps. But hopefully by the time this episode comes out, I'll have a release date for you all, and there'll be all the pre-order stuff, some more information around the tour, and as far as what's going to happen with the new album around that tour, and heaps of other stuff. Basically, the floodgates will hopefully open, and we'll be able to get this ball rolling with the new album, Fallen Idols. Also, speaking of tour dates, I'll quickly rattle them off if you're in Australia. So the 21st of June in Canberra, the 28th of June in Brisbane, the 29th of June in Perth, the 5th of July in Melbourne, the 6th of July in Adelaide, and the 26th of July in Sydney. There will be more dates later on down the track, but for now, that's the first main leg of the Fallen Idols tour called Reunited. And there'll be more stuff coming in due course. So stay tuned for all that. But everything will be over at lord.net.au or lord.net.au/united in the meantime, or you can follow us on the socials, and hopefully there'll be some more information coming very, 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 very soon. I'm drained just thinking about it. I'm excited. I'm really excited, but I am so exhausted. So fingers crossed this all happens really, really soon. I can't wait to get started. Now, self-starter, next week, June 3rd, 5 a.m. will be the next episode and the first episode in season two. I believe it'll be episode 30, I think. So season two kicks off June 3rd, 5 a.m. and I'm really looking forward to sharing this. It'll have a slightly new sound to it. Pretty much the same format, same deal as before, but TY and myself have been just sprucing it up a little bit, you know, polishing the edges a little bit. So you'll notice a little bit of a different sound to it, but more or less the same deal. You can go and listen to season one now, so you can go to selfstarter.com.au or search for it on your whatever podcast player you listen to podcasts through. And I'm really looking forward to sharing these. So they're going to come out each fortnight, every Monday fortnight from the 3rd of June, and it'll go right up until the end of December. So I think about 16 episodes in total. So really looking forward to sharing those stories. And if you're not familiar with Self Starter, self-employment, small business, freelancing. I got that order out of whack. I'm struggling today, guys. So if you know anybody that has their own business, anybody that wants to kick off their own business or wants to become self-employed, people that are all talk, no action, get them onto Self-Starter. There might be a little bit of inspiration there from some of the stories. They're kind of case studies in a way, just of people doing their own thing and making it happen. So it's a lot of really cool, motivating, inspiring stories in season one. And there'll be plenty in season two as well. So really looking forward to getting it out there. And if you enjoyed season one, please get behind season two and share it out. Share it out. Share it around to anybody that might enjoy the podcast. Okay, I'm almost done here. I'm really struggling today. I don't know why. Just brain is elsewhere. I'm going to make myself accountable and announce something before I've actually done it. So I'm recording this May 25th, Saturday, May 25th, so only a few days before this episode comes out. But by the time this episode comes out, I will have, hopefully, released a podcast video series on YouTube. So if you search for my name on YouTube, you'll find my YouTube channel. And there'll be, I can't remember, I think it's about 10 videos, all about how to start a podcast. Really simple stuff, nothing crazy, nothing complicated, nothing terribly over the top entertaining. It's just a really basic video series to kickstart the conversation for people that want to start their own podcast. And it's in response to a lot of friends and people that I've met along the way that have sent me messages and just asked me a bunch of questions about starting their own podcast. And I thought, let's just put something out there. And it's a little bit of fun. It's a bit of a test for me because I don't normally do video. And it was certainly a challenge. So a massive thanks to Tim, who helped me not only video the whole thing, but do all the editing, post-production, and help me get it out there. And there's a lot of extra information that comes off the back of this video series. And I'll see how it goes. So if it's something that you enjoy, please pass it around. If you know somebody who's been talking about or is interested in starting a podcast, share the video playlist or the individual videos, and I hope that people get something out of it. Now, I haven't actually put it out yet. So it's Saturday. I gave myself a goal that by Sunday I would have put it out there, released it, announced it, and I've still got a fair bit of work to do. So I really, this is me putting this announcement out there is holding me accountable. So if you are listening to this and it is the 30th of May or past the 30th of May and you still can't find these videos, then please blast me on social media because that's not good. So hopefully that will be out there. Search for it on YouTube, Andy Dowling, and there'll be a bunch of podcast videos there to check out. Also, I've mentioned this in previous episodes, there will be a mailing list that's going to kick off in June. I've almost finished getting all the templates and everything together for that. It'll be a monthly email kind of newsletter, which will touch on Andy Social, Self-Starter, the band, and lots of other little things along the way, little updates, different projects that I work on or little things that I'm involved with. If I come across any sort of extra items for giveaways and things like that, I want to give you guys first dibs, and just anything else that pops up in my world. I want a little inner circle of people to get exclusive sort of information on certain things along the way. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. You may get an email from me, especially if we've interacted in the past. Otherwise, you can sign up via andydowling.net, I believe, or via the Facebook page. There should be a tab on the Facebook page to sign up to the mailing list. So do that, and hopefully you will get some emails from me, and we'll see how we go. Anyway, enough crapping on for me. Oh, this was a really tough outro. I have struggled. Anyway, lots of cool episodes coming. I've banked up a shit ton of episodes, some really, really good conversations. I'm going on a bit of traveling over the coming months around the country. I'm going back over to Japan in a week or so, and possibly the US later in the year, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, I shouldn't mention these things. But lots of stuff happening, lots of great conversations, lots of stuff recorded, lots of stuff pending. I'm just going to stop talking. Thank you so much. Until next week, folks. Ta-ta. Larry, please.